Tell everybody, say hi, Giselle.
Hi.
I asked her if she was nervous this morning. She's like, yes. I'm like, you kind of should be. Because everyone else says don't be.
Everyone says you should be.
You should be. You're in front of people that I know you trust and love you. Well, most of them love you.
I'm not Stevie.
You're not Stevie. Well, we appreciate that. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself. You can point out your husband for those of you who don't know.
I'm Giselle Alanis. I'm Stevie Alanis's wife, and I have two little boys, Judah and Jonathan. And I've been coming here for 7 years.
Has it been that long?
Or however long we've been here.
A long time.
After the grand opening, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we got a lot of stories to choose from Giselle. So I wanted to start from a beginning. You want to talk, share about a little bit about your dad? Just briefly about that. I know that's something that maybe people don't know about you. Okay. Why don't you share about that?
My dad passed away when I was 5. He was actually killed, and we were all present. So, of course, like, that's a big thing in our lives. Kind of very, obviously very traumatic for everyone. But the way that I dealt with it was kind of just growing up or internalizing it and just being strong for everybody, you know, around me.
And still are.
And still are, yeah.
And your memories of your dad are great, aren't they?
Great, yeah. My dad gave me all the love in the world that he could in the time he was with me, and I cherish it. Yeah, everything is great.
That's neat that 5 years or so, you just have great memories of your dad, and everything that you think about him and remember of him is so sweet.
Yeah, and it's been 25 years.
It's been 25. Yeah. So you just gave your age away.
Everyone knows I just turned 30.
Okay. I wasn't going to say anything. So what's your religious upbringing look like? How was that?
So it started off Catholic, right? Just kind of by default. You know, we would go to Mass with my grandparents when we were asked to, and, you know, you'd be quiet and whatever. So after my dad died, I knew that I always believed in God. We kind of stayed away from church for a while, and then suddenly my mom took us on this, like, crazy journey. I've been to every denomination.
Why don't you list some? Because when people hear denomination, they think Presbyterian and Lutheran.
Yeah, so all those.
All of those and some more.
So then we also were Mormons for a while. We went to the Church of Scientology just to check it out. It was way too weird for us to stay longer. I've been to a Nation of Islam meeting. We've dabbled in Kabbalah and...
In Kabbalah, which is a form of Judaism?
Yeah, so a little for, you know, reading about it and being a massage therapist, right? It's really easy to kind of feel comfortable in, like, New Age stuff. So we were there for a while.
A massage therapist in Montrose.
In Montrose.
So, yeah. That makes a big difference. When you hear about her clients or Stevie's clients, he's a barber down there. It's a whole different crowd than you would meet here in Tomball or Cypress or anywhere north of the Loop.
And I grew up in the Loop, so I'm very comfortable there. But actually, I never quite knew how I felt about Jesus until I was actually at, like, this non-religiously affiliated temple. There were things like past life regressions and... we would always sit under this healing blue light, and so
like an actual light that was
blue?
Yeah,
like a blue light, like, over you, and, like, you, like, meditate, lots of meditations and things like that. But this one day, there was a guided meditation, and it was a Christian pastor, and she led us through communion. And I actually, for the first time, felt Jesus before.
Interesting.
And I felt that I tasted the sacrament, and, like, his presence was just glorious, and so I decided how I felt about him then.
So
at a random temple where Jesus was nowhere inside.
Not your normal Billy Graham altar call?
Yeah, no.
So you felt like you experienced Jesus at that time. How old were you?
I was 16.
And then you've been in a Christian church since then?
Yeah, so kind of like non-denominational evangelical. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How did you meet Stevie, and when did you meet Stevie?
I met Stevie freshman year of high school at a museum field trip.
Yeah. A museum field trip? Yeah. You guys were both very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was coming out of the bathroom. I
remember seeing. And sort of like Jesus, a light shone upon Stevie.
Like bumped into each other a little bit. Yeah, I was like, oh, he's cute.
Okay.
And then I had heard about him, you know, like another girl liked him. And I was like,
he's
handsome.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
And we became best friends. Okay. Never dated in high school.
You became friends, never dated in high school. Mm-hmm. And then you had an experience in high school at 18. Mm-hmm. You had an abortion. What was that? Was that in high school or right after high school?
It was right after. It was actually like right after graduation.
Okay.
So I had, I was dating this guy and we were together for a few months and I graduated. And just after I found out I was pregnant. And I had between scholarships and financial aid, I had a full ride at University of St. Thomas, and this was not on my plan. I never wanted to be a mom, really. Like, I didn't dream about it. I had these major plans of going, you know, doing pre-med, and then, you know, not quite sure where medicine fit in, but going to either Baylor or doing physical therapy, just kind of by default, and then I was going to maybe get married and travel the world and someday have kids, but my mom would help me raise them.
Okay.
Yeah. We'd have a big house and the American dream, right? Like, yeah. But success was going down this one path, and finding out I was pregnant was just like the biggest disappointment. You know, I knew it would be a disappointment to everyone. It was a huge disappointment to me. I didn't want the baby. It was going to ruin my plans. And so without hesitation, I decided to get an abortion, and I went and did it, and that ended up ruining my plans too.
So even though you thought the baby was going to ruin your plans, you had an abortion and it still ruined your plans. So how did having the abortion ruin your plans? If your plans were set on not having a child,
right. That
kind of fulfilled that function.
Right.
What happened?
Well, it shone the light on who I really was at the time, like deep down, that, you know, even though I wanted to maybe go out and like, you know, someone asks you what you want to do with the rest of your life, and you're like, I want to help people, but the closest little person that would have been next to me, I didn't want to help. I wanted to get rid of, and I knew having a baby would let everyone know what kind of person I really was, because there was such hatred for this little baby, that I knew I would abandon her to her dad's parents, and I would, everyone would know what I was like. And that, killing my baby, I was able to, it shone light to myself that that's who I really was. And so, you know, depression started, and I botched school, and, you know, kind of spiraled for a little while.
So the baby, instead of having an abortion and struggling with guilt or condemnation or shame, it was the baby highlighted what you already thought about yourself.
Right.
Which wasn't a lot.
Not very much.
Yeah. So how do you come out of that then? What happens after that you actually come out of that where you begin to think differently about yourself?
Well, I started going to church again about 6 months after. And actually, Steve and I started talking again at that point, and, you know, we started our relationship. And it not that it was healed overnight, but like really being honest with myself, you know, talking to other people about it, praying a lot, and just going through that, you know, it took a while. I mean, it continued.
Yeah.
It continues.
Yeah, it continues. Did you hear something from God about yourself that helped? Specifically help clarify something, or?
I knew that I shared it with the youth when I was mm-hmm. with Steve there at Freedom Fellowship, and I knew that I could maybe start helping other people that have, you know, young everyone. If I never thought that I would end up there, like, it was very apparent to me that anyone can end up anywhere.
Right.
And I think that everyone kind of needs to realize that, like, you can turn out to be someone that you really didn't expect you to be.
Now, did you think that you could never wind up there because you didn't like there, you didn't want to be the unwed mom, the young teenage mom, the
exactly.
Stereotype.
I was smarter than that, and I had like opportunities where other people didn't have the opportunities. Things were really open with my mom. I could have easily gone and gotten on birth control, anything.
Right,
you know, I knew how to avoid that situation.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, or I didn't. Yeah. Either way.
So you're up at another church. You're dating Stevie. You share with the youth about the abortion, and then you and Stevie come up with a bump in the road.
So I guess it was about a year after that, maybe a year and a half, and there I am again in the same situation, pregnant.
Pregnant again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's changed between the first pregnancy and this pregnancy?
Well, there was no option of abortion. It was, I'm having this baby.
Yeah.
And I kind of knew before I knew that I was pregnant. And I actually went to a Planned Parenthood and I found out I was pregnant. And they asked me, well, if they saw on my chart, you know, we see you've had an abortion. Would you like another one? And I said, no, you know, I'm gonna keep the baby. It was mixed emotions. It was like, oh, seriously, I can. And then it was excitement because I have another chance to do things differently.
Yeah. So talk to me more about the how you felt being pregnant again. What's it, if you've had, just because it's only, what, about 2 years or 2.5
well,
years?
Well, between the abortion and this, it's been 4 years.
4 years, so you're 22, basically.
Yeah, I'm 22.
Okay. So is there a different feeling, or it starts out with the same feeling, but it morphs into something else? What's going on in you?
So initially it was, you know, oh my God, I'm here again. Like, again, I'm going to disappoint everybody. But not only that, like, I felt really stupid. To be there again. And this time being in a different setting, right? Because before I was pregnant, but it was more of like, you know, a successful, like, path, reason why it was devastating. But this time, Stevie's leading at the church.
He's leading worship for the youth. And,
right, yeah. He's, like, everyone loves him. Yeah. He's, you know, he's got this path that we think he's on, and I'm a bump in that road.
You're a bump in that road.
Yeah. Like a major, like literally a bump, right?
So it's like it's almost like you, the first time you have an abortion, you ruin your plans.
Yeah, and this
and time. Then you decide to keep this baby, and it ruins Stevie's.
Yeah, not the act of keeping the baby, but just the act of being pregnant again. Yeah, it was, we didn't know what it looked like to tell everybody or how we would even go about that. We kept it a secret for months, and ate away with me the entire time, because all I think is I'm like just a major hypocrite sitting here at church every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think I even stopped going for a little while because I couldn't take it anymore. And once we knew that the baby was fine after the first trimester, it was time to tell everybody, and we had to tell everybody.
I'd tell everybody.
Yeah.
Let's go back. And you and I met
just before
that. So we're up in Magnolia. I'm an executive pastor up there. I'm new. She's new to me, and I ask her if she's an Alanese. Well, Giselle being who Giselle is, she's not an Alanese then.
No,
Giselle being
Garcia.
Who Giselle is, immediately says, what, you calling me an Alanese just because I'm Mexican? So it was on from there. We liked each other since that time.
He was so embarrassed. He was red. And I was like, I'm actually dating one. I'm on that path.
And then, if I remember right, you were embarrassed when you found out I was somebody
important.
I did.
I thought I was just some guy.
You didn't know I was a new executive pastor.
I was like, that's Les, because I'd heard about him for like months at this point.
So that was a nice meeting.
Yeah, it was.
So
the rest is history.
So describe telling everybody. What's that feel like?
First we told my mom, and I waited till she was a little... You know, she had a couple of beers, and it was a little bit easier.
That's not like a strategy tip for
y'all. Yeah, it really isn't.
Zeke, don't wait to tell your parents anything.
And it was actually an accident. It was like she asked, and I had to tell her yes. And then it was time to tell Steve's parents, and he told them on his own. And he told the pastor of the church, you know, that we were there. And so the pastor said, well, you're going to have... I don't know how exactly how it went, but anyway, it ended up Steve telling the entire congregation one Sunday morning, and I'm sitting on the front row, and Stevie being so eloquent, he made it like this very sweet thing about, you know, yes, we were in sin, but it was going to be the best times of our lives and things like that. And all I felt was, I was sitting in the front row, and you're sitting next to me, and I just felt everybody just looking at me. And I had shared with the youth before that I had had an abortion and stuff, and so they knew that this wasn't my first pregnancy, and I'm sure their parents knew. I mean, I don't know the extent to who knew what, but it wasn't. Everyone knew this wasn't my first time, you know, and that was super difficult for me to sit there all alone until you put your arm around me.
I think you were standing up. Were you just?
I don't remember exactly. I remember I was trying to, like, just hold everything in and, you know, really difficult.
Good times.
Yeah. One of the best memories. I've struggled back and forth with how I feel about that situation, but it is what it is. It helped some people come forth, you know, and talk about their situation. When it was over, all of the kids from the youth came and gave us big hugs, and that was really sweet.
And it's interesting that Stevie able to, you know, articulate it like he did. And Stevie shared some about this, and Giselle thought he was too
fluffy
and beautiful about what they went through. But really, think about it, now that you're saying it, Stevie was right the time of your life. It has been, I mean, you've got a second child that's beautiful, and you guys seem to like each other quite a bit. So you do when people, because when we look at people's lives, what do we see? We see where they're at right now. We don't see all the pain that they've carried with them. We don't see the pain that they've sat in church for years holding on to, or feeling like there's a spotlight specifically on them. They're the only ones suffering. So that has become a really good, you guys have a really good life together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Thanks to Stevie. No, I'm kidding. So what, I just had a question here. So in that, you felt like you had ruined your life, the first pregnancy. You have an abortion. Your life still, it's basically your dreams or where you were going cuts off. So now you're pregnant and you get married, and you have Stevie involved. What's your thought processes at that time? What are you believing about yourself at that time?
Well, I'm just feeling like it's, you know, I joke around about this, but this is really how it was, that Stevie was like the golden boy, you know, and here I am tarnishing that image, keeping him from whatever glorious things he was set out to do. Feeling like I'm to blame about everything. Just shame, all shame. At the same time, feeling very excited. Like, here we have, I'm finally going to be with him, you know, without having to feel ashamed. But then also, like, here's this little baby, and I'm super happy, but I messed up so badly the first time. Like, do I deserve it? I thought for sure I was going to die in childbirth. I thought I was going to. I thought, you don't deserve to live and see him grow up. Stevie didn't know that till a lot later, that's how I felt. Yeah. But, now even if you wanted to do those things that you couldn't do before, like, you can't because you have a baby, but then, you have a baby.
Yeah.
So just a lot of mix. And then also feeling like, is he only marrying me because I'm pregnant? You know, is that something that's going to be, like, looming over us for the rest of our lives? And so, you know, Judah's born, and it was, like, complete love and redemption, and suddenly I have a second chance. And I just poured everything I had into him, a little too much at first, you know, because then suddenly I'm lost in him. And then we become lost in this little family. And then that brings you down. It's like, well all you are is a mother. You know, you're not. Though that's huge. All you can't do anything on your own. You know, you have this baby. Motherhood's already really crazy. So, without all that, but suddenly I'm good at being a mother.
Yeah.
I went from being the worst mother to being a good mom.
So would you say that's what God's done in your story's redemption is coming? Why don't you describe that worst mother to...
Well, you know, here I am pregnant the first time, not wanting... I believe the baby was a little girl and not wanting her at all. You know, hating to see myself in the mirror and trying, you know, neglecting, doing everything I know that you shouldn't do when you're pregnant, aside from, you know, drinking and smoking, you know, just living kind of dangerously, not thinking about this little one. And to the point of, you know, even murder, right? Like, the worst, to loving and nurturing and caring and careful and, you know, focused. It's night and day.
Yeah. Heart completely closed to heart completely open.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you had something happened where you had a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It described the dream that was kind of helped heal your heart and things like that.
So I dealt with the act of the abortion, you know, with me, my end of it. But I still would look at the baby as, you know, just kind of a victim of what happened, and that was it. But Judah was about 4 or 5 months old, and I had a dream. And in this dream, I'm laying in this big white bed, and Stevie comes in, and he brings me Judah, and I'm loving on him. And Steve looks at me, and he says, you know, it's her birthday today. You know, I'll take Judah for the day. You really should just spend the day with her. And I remember looking around the room, and there's pictures of Judah and, like, all this. And I'm like, who is he talking about? And then suddenly it clicks that it's my little girl. And I say, okay, you know, I'll take him. And I get up and I get dressed, and I walk to the end of the room. And in this closet is my little girl. She's about 6 or 7. She's about 4 or 5. And she's in this little closet of a room with her little bed, and she has little things, you know, here and there, but she's in the closet. And she has dark black hair like mine and little white skin and blue eyes. And she's like, Mommy, I can't believe you came today. You remembered. It's my birthday. And she threw her arms around me, and we hugged, and we spent the whole day together in my dream. And I realized that that was the first time I allowed myself to feel for her and to love her and to be her mom.
Right. To actually be with her and then grieve not being with her. And
yes,
that's great.
For sure.
Good. So what has, so you're 30 years old and you mm-hmm. already said that.
Uh-huh.
So what have you become, what's changed about how you believe about God in the last 10 years or so? From these things, what belief has changed in you?
Well, I believe that he can change a person.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't give up on them, and he doesn't hate them for the hate that they've given and had. And I know that the only way that I can love Steve and love the boys is because of the love that he gives me, and he shows me how to give them.
That's good. I think that's true of all of us, too. Is it real? If we're really going to truly love them and not selfishly, it's God loving them through us, isn't it?
For sure.
Good. So if you were gonna tell any ladies who have had an abortion or who are struggling, being out of wedlock moms or anything like that, what would be your words of encouragement for them or your challenge to them?
Just for the ones that have an abortion, you know, you can ask God for forgiveness, and healing will come. You know, there's all kinds of help. I didn't go anywhere specifically for help, but, you know, was able to really kind of get through it. And new moms, I help new moms all the time.
Why don't you describe? Yeah, I forgot about that. That's a great way to close. Describe what you do.
So I am a massage therapist, particularly for pregnant women, but also I'm a doula, and I help moms going through labor and first time mom. I love it. I love it. Because I know all those emotions that you feel are very real, and you don't really feel like you can talk to anybody about them. you know, you don't always, you're not always patient with the baby, or you're not always, it's very daunting. People forget about you when the baby's born.
Yeah.
So I love hanging out with new moms.
Yeah. So, so describe what a doula is, just for anybody who doesn't know.
So I am with them from, well, the point where they need me to a couple hours postpartum, but I'm there through the whole labor, kind of helping coach them and helping them feel better and massaging them, you know, encouraging them. I did it for Craig and Caroline. Yeah. It was awesome.
I think you're going to do it for my niece also.
Oh, I would love to do it for her.
So on the, so you you start when you're 18 and you have this false belief about yourself, not being able to love a child, not wanting a child, having all that in you, and then here you're helping moms in very most intimate, private, hard parts of their life is their pregnancy.
For sure.
Good. Awesome. Anything else you want to say?
It wasn't that nerve-wracking after all. No, I feel good.
Please give Giselle a hand. Let's thank her. Thank you, Giselle. Stevie will help you. Stevie will help you get that off. And I just want to, you know, on the, just this closing here is that, that sense of shame and condemnation. It says, therefore, there is now no condemnation, none. If there's any sense of condemnation, of shame, of I have to hide, anything that you've done, have done, or are doing, it's not true. Don't hide those things. At another level, though, it's not good enough for us to just say there's no condemnation. We have to walk in our own hearts, in our own lives, as not being condemned. And that's really powerful. So when we share our story of our past, of what we've gone through, of who we should be without Christ, I like how Giselle, I don't know if she used those words, but who she would have been, who she thought she was. And when we talked earlier in the week, she said, this is the person I would have been without Jesus. I think we all need to know this is who I would have been. And that's part of our story when we tell our three-act play of connection, conversion, and then the celebration of what comes. There should be no condemnation in how we tell our story, in what we're going through, even if it's right now, in our thoughts, our emotions, in our finances, in our life, is there's no condemnation. And when we live without condemnation, it allows other people around us to share their hurt stories and to share what they're going through and for us to minister to that and lead them into Jesus. I don't mean just those that aren't saved and lead them into a salvation experience, but lead people. All of us need to be leading one another into Jesus, into this relationship, into what Stevie said on the stage is that it's a person. So we keep leading. I have financial trouble. Well, here's Jesus. What is Jesus saying about it? I have emotional struggles. Well, what's Jesus saying about it? And it can be done through prayer. It can be done through Bible study. It can be done through going to Kairos for the freedom that we do. It can be done through a multiple different ways, but it's all finding out where Jesus is, all right? Go ahead and stand up, and I'm going to bless you before you go. So, Father, we just thank you for your grace and your peace and that freedom that we can be ourselves in you, and it's good enough. And just right now, by the power of your Holy Spirit, I just ask where there's shame, that it be removed. Where there's condemnation, that we push it out the door. Where we feel like we can't come and ask for help. Where we feel like we can't talk to you. Where we feel like we can't vocalize and say what is happening, what we're struggling with. Just recognize it as fear, as shame, as an idea that we need to be something other than we are right now to come to you. And that's a lie. We come to you openly and freely. Just like Jonathan and Judah will come to Steve and Giselle, just like Victoria, our little 7-year-old, will run to us, unashamed that they're dirty, unashamed that they're messy, unashamed that they're hurt, just coming to us for help. We want to do that with you, Father. Help us to remove all barriers within us that would keep us from you. Help us to remove all barriers within us in our belief system that would keep us from seeking healing and peace. In Jesus' name. God, bless us in our finances, in our homes, in our families, our marriages, in our minds, and our emotions. In Jesus' name. Everybody said? Amen. God bless you.